No? All right. So we're saying then that even in the, every day in the 365 markets in Rome, the king chooses a different market in order to have his dinner over there. Okay? All right. He returns, which means what? Means that he makes the cycle all over again, right? When he gets finished with 365 dinners in different places, so he goes back again. No. I have to retract that, because I read it as Hodor for a moment, but it's not Hodor, it's for Hador, which is a different story. Now, what they're saying is interesting. It says that if a person lives in Rome, okay? Even though he was not born in Rome, but nevertheless, no tail pros from base Hamelo. You know what? He gets a stipend from the royal treasury. In other words, they give out food and drinks. And of course, we know what was the whole business, you know, that the Roman populace became used to. It was panem et circenses. In other words, bread and circuses, okay? This is what they gave the masses. So obviously, then, this was a stipend, so to say, that the Roman government did in order to keep the people happy. So, even if you're not born in Rome, but you can still get it by living in Rome. Okay, and not only that, but, they had no lot more. And if a person was born in Rome, Apopishin Adorbo, even though now he's not living in Rome, but nonetheless, also what? No to person based on Melon. So they get stipends from the world treasury. And not only that, he says, but Shleshis Alofim Bevane Yeshbo. You know what? They have 3,000 houses of Avana. What's Avana?
Avana.
A bath, of course. So that they have 3,000 bathhouses, right?
3,000.
Yeah, in Rome. House, 3,000 bathhouses they have over there. Not only that, the Chamesh Meos Chaloyna is well in Oshan, Chutz Lachema. Not only that, but they have 500 windows that are able to raise the smoke higher than the wall. In other words, the windows are such that they let out all the hot air from the bathhouses and advance. They have ventilation, you know, like the smoke heaters over here in Kadima, which don't always work.
It doesn't work.
So they have these windows that are so high that higher than the wall of the city, and they ventilate these so that it does not cause any smoke to accumulate on the walls. Okay?
Talking about the bathhouse.
Right. Right. Then he says,
Sido
Echad, he says, one side of Rome is Yam, is the ocean, right? Sido Echad, Harim. Another side, he says, is mountains. It means mountains and hills, okay? Sido Echad, and one of them, you know what? It has a Mechitza Shebazel. In other words, it has a wall made of metal. In other words, that's how hard it is, right? But Sido Echad, and one of them has a side which is Chulsis Mtsula. Chulsis means that it's small stones, in other words, like the pebbles of a beach, right? And the Mitsula means that, you know, you have all kinds of stagnant pools and things like that over there.
What's the purpose of telling the story there?
Ah, okay, you ask a good question. The answer is that they want to point out what is the gedula of Rome. Because in the final analysis, right, the Jews were what? They were the ones who were competing with Rome. They were competing with Rome from the point of view of the philosophy. We held our belief in the Beinish Elohim. They were the representatives of the pagan world. But nevertheless, even though we were subject to them, so we have to recognize, in other words, too, that they have, you know, certain physical advantages and certain material advantages that they have. Okay?
Doesn't it sound like they were protected on all sides, the mountains and
oceans? Yeah, right. He wants to point out, right, that even the geography of Rome also protects them from invasion and so on. All right, I don't have to tell you that this is sort of a picture of Rome, which is a little bit exaggerated, okay? But it doesn't have to be taken literally. It's not halacha. Remember, Agada is not halacha. And even though Agadas are very, very interesting, they're there for all kinds of purposes. Basically, Agada is there in order to illustrate the points of Yiddishkeit, the Psukim, the Torah, and things like that, and so on, right? But at the same time, they also give us examples of great teachers and what they had to say, and so forth, okay? But halacha, this deals with the din. All right, so now we come back to halacha over here, okay? Halacha is Korus Hamigilo Be'adar Rishon, Bala Rishon, this Avraham Shono, Korus Bala Sheni. Okay, that's the first part of the mission. Then the second part of the same statement says, Ein Be'adar Rishon, Bala Sheni, Elektriyas Hamigilo Matan Zogin. All right, so first I have to preface it. The way we conduct ourselves today, in other words, translating, okay? The way we conduct ourselves today, our calendar is set so that we know when we're going to have a leap year and when we have what we call a Shana Pshuta, you know, an ordinary year which has only one Adar. Okay. In the leap year, we're all aware of the fact that in the leap year we have two Adars. Okay. So, of course, if we have two others, naturally it's going to raise an important question. When is Purim? Is Purim in first Adar or is Purim in second Adar? And we'll see that there is a difference of opinion as to when Purim is to be observed. Okay?
Well, if you put it in second Adar, then it means if it's not in the first Adar, you can't put it in the regular, you wouldn't be able to.
Okay. All right. So, we have our din that we know, you know, what is what today.
Yeah.
But remember, when the Mishnah was written, this is still at a time where, as we learned in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, they're still looking at the moon to see if they could spot a new moon, right? And so therefore it was up to the Beis Din, first of all, to declare that a new month had begun, and that would either mean that the previous month had 29 days and that this declaration came on the 30th day, which was now the first of the new month, or if there was no indication then in that particular case we would say that the following day is Rosh Chodesh, right? So then the previous month is going to have 30 days and then we first have the beginning of a new month. Okay, so this was because it was by observation, as we learned when we studied Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, remember? Now, when this was written, in other words, it was up to the Beis Din to decide when is the beginning of Adar, right? But the Beis Din also had another prerogative, and that other prerogative was the fact that they could decide whether to make a leap year. Now, how did they know when to make a leap year? So with that, they had different indications. Gemara has gone into certain things, and if you remember, for example, they would take a look to see what was happening in nature. Obviously, if it was still wintry or something like that, then, you know, they had good reason to decide that they could declare an Ibriyor, as we would say. In other words, to say that, you know, to add another month of Adar, okay?
Okay. That was before they established the pattern.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when
because.
Okay,
he was in the 400s, so I don't have to tell you. We're talking in a time which is roughly about 200 or so, so it didn't happen until several centuries afterwards, okay? And of course, for centuries prior to, let's say, that the Beis Din of Rabban Gamliel, whom we read about at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, you know, the centuries before, everything was al pi re'ir, as we would say, according, you know, to the sight, and then the Beis Din declared that it was an ibiyor, it was Rish Chodesh, or they declared it was an ibiyor, okay? And they had, as I said, different standards to go. So, all right. Now, naturally, what comes after Shvat? Adar. And at that time, no decision had been made what? That there should be an ibiyor, right. All of a sudden comes the end of Adar, right? And they decide to make an ibiyor. But what has happened in the Adar?
They already had
celebrated Purim, exactly. So this is now what they're working on in order to decide the Vikuntis, first of all, how does it happen, and then what should we do? Okay? So the first part of the Mishnah says, Koras HaMegillah Ba'adar HaRishay. Let's say that they read the Megillah in Adar, which happened to be the first Adar, and then all of a sudden what happened? The Sabrashon, and then the year became an Ibiyor, it became, you know, a year with the second Adar. So in that case, what should you do in the second Adar? So they say, in that case, they say, you have to read the Megillah again in Adar Sheni. This is what the Mishnah says, okay? You read it in Adar Risha? Well, if you have a leap year, it has to be also read in Adar Sheni.
Now, that's just the reading of Megillah. It does not refer to all the other rules.
Well, this is going to be a question that they'll have to discuss. They're going to have to discuss that. Right. Okay, and then it says, the last part of this mission says, Eime Nada Harisha Nada Sheni. It says, there is no difference between first Adar and between second Adar. That is, as far as the how we celebrate, you know, Purim. Elo Kriyas HaMegillah Matos Legillah. Except for the reading of the Megillah and the gifts that we have to give to the poor people. Because if you remember, earlier in the Masechta we read what? That, remember that they gave permission to people who lived in villages who were accustomed to come in to the larger cities on the Monday or Thursday, so they gave permission to them to read the Megillah earlier. But earlier would mean, let's say, on the 12th of Adar, or on the 13th of Adar, or on the 11th of Adar. Those were possible dates, as we remember that we learned, okay? And then the question is, okay, and what else? After all, in Purim, you have not only the reading of the Megillah, you have Batonos HaAvyodim, gifts to the poor people. Right. What else do we have to have? We have to have a Surah. So this Purim, okay? And of course, the Surah means that you have to have, you know, a Mishtev, a Simcha, right? Okay? And one other thing, of course, and that's Mishloach Bodos. You have to send the Shalach Bodos to people, okay? So the question is, then, let's say that you did all these things in Adar Risha, okay? Presupposing, based on the Mishnah, you did all these things, celebrated Purim, and you read the Megillah, and you gave gifts to the poor, and everything else, and so on. Now, all of a sudden, now what do we have? We have a second Adar. So what do we have to do again? Do we have to go through the whole business again of having a Suda, sending Shalach Monas, right? Yeah, all right, that's a different story, okay. Because they don't, here the halacha has nothing to do with Tanis Esther, right? We're dealing with Purim itself, okay. So, that being the case, then we have to say, all right, second Adar we said that you have to do what? You have to read the Megillah again, even if you read it the first Adar. And how about gifts to the poor? That too, they say. Why? Because as we learned previously, the poor people know that at the time when the Megillah is read, this is when they get gifts as well. So that they are looking for the gifts, and you know, days, weeks in advance, they're looking forward, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, a light, you know. So they're looking forward, you know, to get gifts on Purim. So that therefore they know, if we're reading the Megillah, then that's it. That means this is the day that we're going to get the gifts. Okay, so this is what we learned in the Mishnah. We'll call a halt tonight, and then we'll continue from the Gemara next week in the Yetzah Hashem. All right, let's see. Tonight is what? The 8th of August. 8-8, huh? Okay. The year 2001. We are currently on in Maseches Megillah, Daf Vav Omid Beis, and we last week we concluded with the new Mishnah, which says that if they read the Megillah on first Adar and then the year became an Iber year, it became so that an extra Adar was added to the calendar, then in that particular case you have to read it in Adar Sheni. That was the first part of the Mishnah, and then the Mishnah continued and said that there is no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni except for the reading of the Megillah and gifts to the poor. This is what we had in the Mishnah. Needless to say that we are now ready to tackle the Gemara, and the Gemara is going to dispute what we have learned in the Mishnah. Okay? All right. Gemara begins by saying, Holy Inyan, say the Parshiyos. Okay. You see where the first big line is? Okay? So go down a couple of lines over there. You see where the black, it says Masnisa over there, with the abbreviation. And then you see the abbreviation that says Gimel Mem, which means Gemara. Okay? Yeah. Does everybody have a copy? Yeah. Okay. So we're now going to see that there are differing views among the authorities as to what the language of the Mishnah is and what is it teaching us. So the Gemara continues. Go right ahead. It says, Holy Inyan, Seder Parshio Zevzeh Shovin. Okay. So first of all, we have to understand what Parshios we're talking about. We're not talking about the Parshios in Tefillin this time, nor in the Mezuzah, although this has been the subject of conversation and the subject of learning recently. We're talking about the fact that there are four Shabbos during the course of the year where we read a special selection as the Musaf, and they are called by the name of the contents of what we read. The first one is Parsha Shkolim, okay? And obviously from the word Shkolim we recognize, this has to do with guilt, okay? Then the next one is called Parsha Zohar, of course Zohar means remember, okay? And then after that we have Parsha Pora, okay? And of course Pora means literally the cow, okay? The red cow, of course, right? And then finally Parsha HaChodesh, in which the reading, of course, is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. In other words, it's anticipating the month of Nisan and preparations for the Pesach, okay? So these were already ordained by our sages a long, long time ago. And so the way we arrange it in the calendar, okay, Parsha Shkolim, if it happens to be also Rosh Chodesh Adar, then in that is that Shabbos, so in that particular case that's when we read it, okay? If on the other hand Rosh Chodesh Adar begins in the weekday, then of course we read it on the Shabbos preceding. In other words, the Shabbos on which we'll bench Rosh Chodesh Adar, then will be Parsha Shkolim. And of course, what is the major content of that? We read a little passage in which we speak about the obligation that every Jew has to contribute Matzis HaShekel, to contribute a half shekel, and this went into the temple treasury in ancient times. Of course, prior to that, while the Jews were in the wilderness, it went, to the Mishkan, but it went for a specific purpose. This geld went primarily in order to buy animals for the korban, because, as you know, korbanos, sacrifices, are of two different types. I'm not talking now about the chatos or an oshim or anything like that. I'm talking about the fact that some of the korbanos are those that are brought by private individuals, okay? For whatever reasons it may be because he sinned, it may be because, let's say, he wants to celebrate the festivity, whatever it may be. For Todo, he went through a serious illness or whatever it may be, and he wants to express his disrobation. This is a korban yochid, okay? And on the other hand, you also have korbanos tzibur. In other words, these are the sacrifices which were brought on behalf of the congregation of Israel, the entire community. And the korbanos tzibur, well, first of all, as you know, we have tomid, in other words, the daily offering, which was offered in the morning and again in the afternoon, okay? So, this is the subject of what we read every Rish Chodesh, but we begin with Savas Leisurim, Alta Emskob, Dilak, Mind Yisha, you know this, and so on. And it says, Asakeves Echotaseb, Abokevi, Asakeves Hashaini, Tasebin, Abokevi. All right? In other words, a lamb has to be sacrificed in the morning, lamb, you know, in the afternoon. Then, of course, we have what we call Musafim. What are Musafim? On Shabbos, on Rish Chodesh, on all the holidays, including the Chol HaMoed. So we have different prescribed offerings that were offered in addition, which is what the word Musaf means in this case, in addition to the regular daily sacrifice. But remember, all these are on behalf of the entire community of Israel. Here are some others too. For example, if the Sanhedrin made a mistake, let's say in the law, and then in that case they had to bring a chatas, or if the king of Israel made a mistake, or if the high priest made a mistake, or something like that, you know. So in that case, he had to bring a chatas, and this was normally a chatas brought on behalf of the community of Israel. So, if it was a sacrifice which was a korban tzibur, to these that you had to buy the animal, because all Israel has a share in these sacrifices. Because all Israel has a share of the sacrifices, this is what the Matzis HaShekel was used for. Okay? Now, of course, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, they also had other Matzis HaShekel collections, because they needed it in order to construct the Mishkan, right? And then they needed a special one in order to, believe it or not, to make the sockets, the silver sockets into which the posts fitted, so that, you know, you could have a stockade and everything else and so on. So, you know, they had special collections for that as well. Okay. But the Matzis HaShekel, the regular one, was on behalf of the treasury in order to be able to buy the animals for the Korban Tzibur. Okay. That had to be done when? It had to be done as close to Rosh Chodesh Ador as possible. Okay? Of course, we have Mishnah, Masechta, which begins, it's called Shkolim, right? And it begins, the first Mishnah, and says, you know, that B'yecha Be'ador Machrizin Al HaShkolim Yal HaKilayim. In other words, public announcements had to be made in the synagogues for two purposes. One was to collect Shkolim, people should, you know, be prepared to give to the treasury. And the other one was that if you had kilayim means that you had seeds that were sown together, helter-skelter, in other words, seeds of different species, you understand? In particular, let's say, if you planted wheat in a vineyard or something like that, then in that particular case, it had to be uprooted, because this was a violation of a law that we find in the Torah, the law that we call kilayim. Okay, so they made public announcements about these things. So that was Parshas Shkolim. Zohar, remember, obviously this has to deal, right, has to deal with Purim, because it's a story about Amalek. You know, Zohar Sashel Sadecha Amalek, right, remember what Amalek did unto you, etc. And this, of course, we find at the end of Parshas Kiseitse in Sefer Devarim. We'll be reading it in another few weeks, okay? But this passage is also read on the Shabbos prior to Purim. Okay? Following Purim, it may be the immediate week after, or maybe sometimes there's a break, but at any rate, then you have Pasha Parah, which deals, of course, with the idea that if you have become Tomei by contact with dead bodies or something like that, then in that particular case, before you can come to the Beis HaMikdash for Pesach in order to offer your sacrifices over there, you had to go through a process of purification wherein they use the ashes of the Parah Aduma, which they sprinkled with water, and they dipped hyssop into it, and so the whole thing is described at the beginning of Parsha Chukas. Okay, what they had to do, what the Kohen had to do in order to purify a person from Tum. So because of its proximity to the fact that we have to get ready for Pesach and to bring sacrifices, and the person had to be in a state of purity when he went to the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore it's read at that point. And then, of course, HaKadosh, as I already mentioned before, deals with preparations for Pesach. Okay. So, what we're saying over here right now, we have over here a Baraisa. Remember, Baraisa is a statement which was never included in the official Mishnah, but nevertheless, it represents the views of teachers who lived during the Mishnaic period. Okay? And therefore, in many cases, they are authorities that we have to consider. Okay? So that being the case, yes. Yes, once more, we are discussing the Gemara on Daf Vav Amud Beis. Vav Amud Beis. Okay? All right. So the first statement that the Gemara says is Hola Inyan Seda Parshio Zeb Zeb Shavit. In other words, according to this authority whom they are citing, then when it comes to reading the parshios, in other words, the special Shabbos readings, you know, that we mentioned, so you'd have to do it again when? In Adar Sheni, even if you have already done it in Adar Rishon. Okay? Of course, remember again, by us we don't have the problem simply because we have a fixed calendar and we know when a leap year is coming. So in that particular case, we always do it in connection with Adar Sheni and not in connection with Adar Rishon. But at the time when, you know, that this halacha was developing, that wasn't the case. They still were able to be, you know, to observe the moon and to decide, you know, that a month began based on the observation and the testimony given before the best, as we learned in Maseches Rosh Hashanah.
What
okay.
You're saying is that they used to read the Megillah twice.
If it was necessary, according to this opinion. In other words, if they read it, and then all of a sudden, along comes the Bezdin and says, we're making a leap year, right? And so it's Adar Sheni. So does it mean, therefore, well, we already done it, then that's it? Or does it mean that we have to do it all over again? Okay, so this is what they're saying right now. Okay. Now, so far it sounds good, right? So they say, money. So they say, you know what? This statement that we just made, Matznisim, the Baraisa that we just mentioned, it says, Lo Tanakama, doesn't agree with either the first authority, Velo Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yose, nor does it agree with Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yose, Velo Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, nor does it agree with him. So we already have three different authorities, and each one in disagreement with each other, right? The Tanya. As we have learned, and now they cite the Baraisa that they're talking about. It's with Koru es HaMegillah B'Adar B'Rishon. All right. They have already read the Megillah in first Adar. V'Nisabra HaShana, and then the year became a leap year. Okay? So, Koran Osa B'Adar Sheni. You have to read it in Adar Sheni. Shekol mitzvah shenohagos b'sheni nohagos b'rishon, which means literally, because all the mitzvahs that are incumbent to be observed in second Adar also are observed in first Adar. Now that in itself already is a difficult thing to understand, okay? Because what we're saying is over here, first of all, Rashi says Zev Zev Shavin, that, you know, in the previous line where it says that they were both equal, he says Sheim Karom Barishon. He interprets it as saying that if he read it in the first Ador, then Ein Tzorech Lachzor L'Ikras Basheni, then he doesn't have to read it in second Ador. That's what Rashi says. Okay. And okay. So far, this is what we've said. All right. So one interpretation then is that if you did it in Adar Rishon, you don't have to repeat it in Adar Sheni. But nevertheless, what did the Mishnah say? What did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that we have to read it over again, and not only that, but we also have to give batonos, you know, to the poor people. So we see already that there is some sort of a disagreement over there. All right. Now, we also said that there are two other authorities who disagree, right? Okay. Except for the reading of the Megillah. Now, incidentally, notice over here, the statement simply mentions what? It only mentions the reading of the Megillah. Matonis Levyonim, which we find listed in the Mishnah, is not mentioned in this particular statement. Okay, because we have to get back to that in a few moments. All right, along comes another authority, Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Yossi. Omer, he says, Ein kovino sol ba'adar hasheni. No, we do not read it at all in Adar Sheni. Why? Shekol mitzvah shenogos hasheni ein alav goes for Rishon. Okay? Because all the mitzvahs that you want to carry out in the second Adar, he says, that's not what we do. Okay. Excuse me, I skipped a line. The one that doesn't make sense. Right? Yeah, no hagos parishon, because those things that you said that you have to observe in the second, you have to observe in the first Adar. Okay, so far we see that he's in favor of what? First Adar. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, along comes a third authority. Omer Mishum Rabbi Yossi, and he says the name Rabbi Yossi, not the same Rabbi Yossi that we had over here before. Okay. That Af Korino Sob Adar Sheni says, we also read it in Adar Sheni. All right. Shekol Mitzvah Shanei Agos B'Sheni, Einu Agos B'Rishon. Because he says, all the mitzvahs that we have to observe in Adar Sheni are not required to be observed in Adar Rishon. So I don't have to tell you, we have a little bit of a mishmash over here, okay? Have a mishmash. I mean, thank God that our calendar is fixed now, so we know what to do, okay? But in those days, as I said, I mean, things were still a little chaotic, you know. It had not yet been formulated. The calendar still had not yet been officially adopted, you know, because that first came in the 4th century or the 5th century. Okay. However, he says, "V'shovin behesper tanis shasurim b'zeh b'zeh." However, he says, you know, there's one thing that we do observe in both Adars, both Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, on this particular date, and you know what it is? He says that we are prohibited to make any hesper, and we're also prohibited from fasting on those days. Both of them, in other words. Now, of course, this last statement is a statement that we still observe to this very day. Because what happens in our calendar when we have a leap year? We have Adar Rishon and we have Adar Sheni, right? Well, if you take a look in our calendar, you'll see that for Adar Rishon in a leap year, the 14th and the 15th have a special name. What do we call it? We call it Purim Katan. Purim Katan, little Purim, okay? And of course, the next day would be Shushan Purim Katan, okay? So, on both of these days, what do? We observe it by not saying Tachnun. And if we don't say Tachnun, then technically we're not supposed to also give a hesped to the Leviath. We're not supposed to give a eulogy to the Leviath. So, these are things, you know, that, and also you're not supposed to fast either on Purim Katan or on the real Purim. Why not? Because we said that these days were ordained as what? As Yimei Mishneh V'Simcha. They were ordained as days for feasting and rejoicing, and so therefore, even if it's Purim Katan, but we still have to observe that aspect of it. Why not fasting on that? Okay. So God's fine. Yes. So now the Gemara gets back and they try to figure out, okay, so who is right? Okay. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, so they say, first thing, you know, this last statement that we had, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Hainu Tana Kama, it's practically the same thing as what the Tana Kama said, right? Tana Kama said what? Read it again in second Adar. And Shimon ben Gamliel says, yeah, you got to read another Shani, right? So, Omer Rav Papa, so Rav Papa said, Seder Parshis Ikabinayu. He says, you know, there is a difference between the two opinions as far as the special Shabbosim that we said, namely Shkolim and Parsha Zohar, right? And of course, that would also affect those that follow Purim as well. Okay. Namely, you know, Purim and HaChodesh. Okay. But particularly, let's talk about this. So he says, yeah, the difference is in this particular case, that if you have read it, okay, then in that particular case, one opinion says you don't have to read the special parshias over again, right? But what is the other opinion? The other opinion is that you do have to read it over again, because Purim should be preceded by the special parshas. So we're back in square one. Okay. So Amar Rapapa says yes, it could be Nayon. The Tanakama, because the first statement so Valchatchila Vasheni. He says the first Tana says you must read those special parshas when and second Adar to begin with. The Eov and Barishon, and if he did it, Avot, okay, then all right. In that case, you have to let it go because he's already read it. Bar Mimikra Megillah, except for bar over here, has nothing to do with son, but it means except, okay? Except for the reading of the Megillah, the Af Al Gav, the Kor Barishon, because even though they have already read the Megillah in the first month, nevertheless, Kor Bashin, you have to read it also in the second month, okay, in the second order. All right. Now, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, he was the one who disagreed with all of them, right? So, why did he disagree? He says, Sovar, he was first of all the opinion, Afila Mikra Megillah, even the reading of Megillah, he says, the Chatchila Barishon. He says, it's the first Adar when we should be reading the Megillah, and not the second Adar. So, does this make sense? The Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Sovar, and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was of the opinion, Afila Seder Parshiyos, even when it comes to the special Shabbos and with the readings over there, the Korah Barishon, Korah Basheni. Okay, he says, even if you read it in the first one, then you have to read it in the second one as well. So, what are the three opinions then? Opinion number one, okay. You read it the first Adar, you have to read it again in second Adar. What about special readings? Well, if you read it, you read it, and that's all there is to it. You don't have to repeat it. That's opinion number one. Opinion number two, everything should be only in first Adar, okay? And not in second Adar. There's no obligation with second Adar, okay? Opinion number three, for the fact that you don't say tachten, you don't have a hesped and so on. But except for that, then okay. Opinion number three, says, yeah, it should be read in second Adar. If you happen to read it in first Adar, you still have to do it again in second Adar, and also the Seder Parshios. You have to read them again in Adar Sheni. So those are the three opinions, okay? Right, yeah.
Maybe a silly question. The reason they have Adar Sheni is to make up the leap year, right?
Correct.
The extra time that they need, right?
Right,
why
absolutely.
Why do they pick Adar? Why not pick a month on which one?
Okay. That's a very good question.
I know, but we have the leap year, so Passover will come in the off year.
Yeah, this is true.
I think.
The question is, for example, maybe make it the month of Av, make it double or something like that. Okay?
Yeah. Well, you don't have a conflict.
Right, there's something like that.
Why not take out a particular?
Okay. The answer is, however, is, first of all, what Ruth had to say, namely that Pesach has to occur in its proper time.
I understand that.
Okay. I mean, this we learned,
that's
you know.
That's why we have the extra month.
We have the extra month. But secondly, think again. What is the order of the months of the year? The order of the months of the year, as far as the Bible is concerned, as far as the Torah is concerned, is that the month of Nisan is the first month of the year, right? The month of Adar, therefore, is the 12th month of the year. Now, where am I going to add an extra month? Am I going to do it number 7? Am I going to do it number 9? No. The logical thing is to do it after I've had 12 months, and then I add a 13th month. So that's the reason why. Okay?
Well, I don't know that it's so logical, but...
it's logical, it's logical.
That's what they do with the English one, too. They have a leap year,
February is not the year.
Yeah, the English calendar is already a different problem. Yeah, without going into it in any great depth, you realize that to begin with. The original Goyish calendar was the calendar that they called the Julian calendar. In other words, adopted during the time of Julius Caesar, okay? And it's based upon the fact that you have 365 and a quarter days during the course of the year, okay? So therefore, every fourth year you make a leap year an additional day, okay? So that's one thing. Then along came a pope, a much later period, by the name of Pope Gregory, and he decided that everything is falling out of sync. And so therefore he revised it. This was, I don't know when, about the 1600s, 1700s or something like that. I forget the exact year. But I know that, for example, George Washington was not supposed to be born on February 22nd. He was born earlier, but because of the change in the calendar, they made it the 22nd or something like that. Okay? So obviously then it would be sometime during the 1600s or the early 1700s that this change came about. Okay. But getting back to the original Julian calendar, the Roman year actually had begun in January. Okay? So that if you count, you know, the it began in March. Okay? It began in March. This would account for the fact that you have March, April, May, June, July, August.
September.
And what is... now we have September. How many fingers do you say?
Seven.
Yeah. What does September mean in Latin?
Seven.
Right. So September means... in other words, it shows that they began the year originally in March, mm-hmm. and not in January. Right. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, this is how it developed. And of course, it's business, you know. Why did they shorten February? Well, they shortened it because Julius Caesar wanted to have an extra day. Okay. Along came Augustus Caesar, and he says, I also want to have a month with 31. So August became 31. Okay. So obviously, they have to... take it at somebody's expense, so they took it out on poor February. Okay.
All right.
Could you
yes.
Distinction between option one and option three?
Option one says that you read the Megillah of the first Adar, and then the year became a leap year. So you have to read it again in Adar Sheni, okay? Because that's the real point. However, the partials that were read, you know, in other words, Shkolim, Zohar, etc., those you don't have to read over again. That's option one. Option three says, to begin with, they all have to be read with in second order. Okay? So that's the difference between them. As I say, we don't have that problem because with our fixed calendar, so all things, you know, are going to work out that... It's all this is going to be in second order, whatever has to be done, give or take, depending upon when do you have Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, because that is also going to affect the reading. But apart from that, this is fixed. Okay. All right. So we continue right now. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right, so now it says, okay, now I feel the same passions, the corporation, corporation. All right, so now they say money, okay. So who should we go according to? So it says, Itanakama, if we go according to the first authority, then Kasha Matonis. What happened? Kasha is that he never mentioned the word matonis in the Baraisa that we read. It's mentioned in the Mishnah, but it's not mentioned in the statement that we quoted, right? I better keep my finger up over here. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, and coming back to him, it says, Kasha nami mikra negila. So on him, the Kasha is, why does he say that you read it in the first order and don't read it in second order? After all, isn't that Purim too? And yet, according to him, everything has to be l'chatchil in the first button. That's it. Okay. He, Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, how about the third authority is the Kasha said the Parshiyos. So the difficulty is, you know, the reading of the Parshiyos. He insists, you know, that everything has to be read all over again in Adar Sheni. So they say, V'yoylom Tanakama. So they say, the truth of the matter is that we follow the opinion of the Tanakama. In other words, that you must read it what? In second Adar, even if you read it in first Adar, right? As we said, if his opinion is also that if we already read the special Parshiyos, then we don't have to. But nevertheless, okay, so we say it's an agreement with the Tanakhama, apparently, right? So he says the Yerlam Tanakhama, Taka we go according to the Tanakhama. So again, that raises a question about Shimon ben Gamliel, right? So he says the Tana. And the first, you know, the first opinion given is Mikra Megillah. He's teaching us that you have to read the Megillah again, when? In second Adar. The Hu Adin, and along with it, we know that you also have to give Matotas Levyonim, even though he did not mention it in the Baraisa. It's only mentioned in the Mishnah, but nevertheless, he says, nevertheless, if we're reading the Megillah, then you have to also give Matotas Levyonim. Why? Because one depends on the other. Obviously, as we've already said, you know, the poor people are looking forward to these matonos, to these gifts. Right. So, therefore, it goes without saying that when you read the Megillah, you have to give matonos to Levyonim. Okay.
They're like
the
3 years.
Right.
Two gifts.
Yeah. All right. The Eboy Seymour, now we have a different opinion. And if you wish, you might say as follows. He says, the truth is not the Tanakhama, but it is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. He, right. Umas Nisan. And the statement that we call is Chesuri Mechsara. There's something that's missing that was not quoted in the statement. The Hochi Katani, and this is what he said. Ein bein arba'os so shabada harisha and liyud dalet. In other words, arba'os so shabada sheni. Right? There's no difference between what we have in on the 14th of Adar Rishon and the 14th of Adar Sheni. Elo mikra megillah, except for the reading of the megillah, umatonis, and also the gifts that we have to give. Holayinian hesperutanis, and when it comes, however, you know, to eulogies and the. And fastings, there was a shoving that, you know, it's prohibited on those days. The Yidu say the Parsha is the Myra, but nevertheless, he never talked about the order of the Parshas. So, Omar Rabbi Chiyah Bar Robin, so Rabbi Chiyah Bar Robin said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he said, Hilchasok Ram Shim Gam Tiyil, says, Halacha Taka follows Ram Shim Gam Tiyil, She Omar Mishim Rabbi Yossi, who said in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yochanan, Ushnehem Mikra Echod Dorshu. And both authorities are actually quoting the same Pasuk, but they interpret it differently. What is the Pasuk? The Pasuk says, Bechol Shono Vishono. This is what we say, you know, that Esther Abalka, you know, she sent letter around to the Jews that they should observe Purim b'chol shana v'shana in every single year. Okay, so Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, remember he was the one who says everything is in Adar Rishon and not in Adar Sheni. What is the reason for his point of view? He says because he says b'chol shana v'shana. Take a look, it says in every single year. Ma kol shana v'shana Adar Hasamoch Lishvat. Just as in every year, every ordinary year, right? What do we find? That the holiday of Purim occurs in Adar, which is closest to what? To Shvat. Shvat Adar, right? So Afkan, so likewise here, when it comes to the reading of the Megillah, when? Adar HaSamuch to Shvat. And it has to be in Adar, which is closest to Shvat. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, He, on the other hand, so very, he's of the opinion, b'chol shona v'shona, right? Every single year, it means ma kol shona v'shona adar hatzomach l'nisan. We're talking about adar which is closest to Nisan. So av kan adar hatzomach l'nisan. So likewise in our particular case, in other words, when you have a leap year, it also has to be in the adar which is closest to Nisan. So they say, okay. Bishlamo, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi. All right, getting back to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, who said everything has to be what? No. Everything has to be in the first order, he says, right?
First
order, yeah. So it was Tabir Tama. We can understand his reasoning, and the reasoning is based upon a principle that we find in the Gemara expressed in various places. And that principle is the Ein Ma'avirin Al HaMitzvos. I don't know if you ever heard of this principle before, but it means that if you're engaged in the mitzvah, you have the opportunity to perform a mitzvah, don't throw it aside and go into something else. Okay? That's the Ma'avir al mitzvah. So, that being the case, here comes the 14th of Adar, and it's Adar Rishon. Okay? But nevertheless, here it is, and therefore, we have a mitzvah to do what? We have a mitzvah to read the Megillah. So don't pass up this, this mitzvah in order to push it off, for a possible second adar. Okay. Okay, so that's his reason. Okay. El Rab Shimon Gamliel. All right, getting back to Rab Shimon Gamliel. Why does he say that you have to do it in second adar, right? My Tama, what's his reasoning? So I'm a Rabbi Tavi. So Rab Tavi said, Tama, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, his reasoning is mismach geula legeula odiv. He says it's more important to have a festival of redemption for the Jewish people near, next to another festival for the redemption of the Jewish people. In other words, in Purim, Jews were saved by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, so that should be closest to Pesach, which is also the holiday of redemption of the Jewish people. So that's the reason why second order, he says. Okay. Rabbi Eliyahu, Rabbi Elozo, Ma Tamil, Rabbi Shimon, Ben Gamdi, Mehocha. It says. Be ready to give out the next page in a moment. Okay. Want to give it out now? Yeah, here is we have. All right, so there won't be an interruption. We'll give it out right now. Don't debate. Okay, take them past, please. Not funny about it. Ruth, yeah. Yep. Yeah. This we're ready to. How did I get this one over here? Oh. This schlepped along for a bit. It must be fussy. Okay, do you have a copy of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is last week. How do I get this over here? Last week. You have Germania? That's the wrong one. That was last week. Does it say 12 on top?
Yeah.
No, that's wrong. Wait, I got the wrong thing.
Oh, 12 is right.
12 is right.
You were on the bottom of 12.
Yeah, all right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's the one they were finishing right now. Yeah. Right. I'm slightly famished tonight, don't you? You'll forgive me if I'm a little bit famished. There must be this argument among all these.
Have you got a different sheet on the group today?
No, the next one should be Zion Omid Aleph. Should be Zion. Should be, have a great big Zion on the top.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I give it to you or not?
Yes.
Maybe in the book is Zion.
Yeah.
Here. Here we are. Okay. There we are. What do you have? Give you the wrong one? My apologies. Here, this is the one I should have given you. The one that says Zion over here in the margin. Sorry. Right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So now we have a couple of more lines to finish on the. Just one more line, really. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So to finish, first of all, Vav Abend Beis. All right. So we see that there the difference of opinion. No, Rabbi Elazar, Omar, Talmud, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So he has a different reasoning for why did Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say that it has to be second order? It says Mehochan. He derives it from a different pasuk. We said before what Bechol Shana Veshana, right? He derives it from a different part of the Megillah, where it says the Kayim. In other words, Esther sent a letter around to the people, you know, to the Jews throughout the provinces, in order to fulfill Esigeres HaPurim HaZos HaShenis. This is what it says. This second letter of this Purim. Okay, in other words, she sent around a second letter. When? The following year, obviously, she sent around. Because first, they had the fighting and so on and so forth, and they observed Purim in order to celebrate. So, when the year came around, she wanted them to celebrate the anniversary, and so she sent around a letter, okay? And it says, Hazos Hashenis. It says, it's the Rifmil Nechtav, and I have to write the word Hashenis, the second, right? The Isterif of Nechtav, and I also have to write the Pasuk which says, Befol Shalom Veshalom. In other words, both of these are necessary, okay? We are now, of course, on Zion on an olive, okay?
You
got it? Yeah. Why? The E, Mibechol Shana Veshana, let's say that it only had been written Bechol Shana Veshana, right? Then Hava Amina, then I might have said as follows. I might have said Kikushan, right? Even in accordance, you know, to the kashas that were asked about this and that. So, in other words, should it be the one closest to Nisan, or should it be the closest one to Shabbat? So that, therefore, Kamash Malon, therefore, we know the answer by virtue of the fact that it's written Hashenis. Now, if it says Hashenis, it means, obviously, then, that in other Sheni, we have to read the Megillah and observe Purim. Okay? Now, the Yiyashmin Hashenis. Now, let's say that we had the word Hashenis, but we would not have had what? Bechol Shana Veshana, every single year. Then, Hava Amina, I might have said, Batachila Barishon Uvasheni. So, I might have said, to begin with, that maybe, you know, I have to observe, you know, I have to observe both on the first Adar and also on second Adar, right? But Rishon Vasheni. So Kamash Malon, that's the reason why we have Bechol Shana Veshana, to tell us, no, that you observe only the one which is what? Closest to Pesach, okay? Now, in the meantime, we have insulted Rabbi Eliezer Barab Yosef because we have not, you know, accepted his point of view. So, Hi Hashenis Mayavidlei. So, what is he going to do? After all, he sees the same Megillah, and he sees the word Hashenis, which was proven, which was used in order to prove the contrary opinion that you have to read it not Hasheni, whereas he's the great patriot for what? For Adar Rishon, right? So, what did he do with the word Hashenis? My other lay, so he says, my boy lay. He needs it for a different reason. Says the Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, as Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda expressed, the other Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, but the Chila, to begin with, he says, Kohu Bashushan, the first Purim was only to be celebrated where? In Shushan, because there the, you know, this was the headquarters, this is where the main miracle took place, right? But if so, and finally, Bechol Ho'elam Kulei. So therefore, the word Hashenis refers not to doing it in Adar Sheni, according to him, but it means that the second time around, the letter went that Jews throughout the world were to observe Purim. Okay. Now we come to a very famous quotation. It says, Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda said, Sholcho Lahem Estel Chachomim, Esther sent a letter to the Chacham, in other words, to the sages, in other words, to the leading scholars of her age, and she said to them, Kivu'uni ledoros, make me permanent throughout the generations. Meaning, of course, what? Meaning, you know, make this Megillah, which, you know, we have all the events of what I did on behalf of my people and the miracles that took place, make it throughout the generations. So Sholchu Lo, you know what they answered her? They said, Kinat Mareves Haleinu Levein Ha'umeis. If we accept the idea that we have to publish the story of the Megillah and observe it throughout the generations, you know what? We're going to arouse anti-Semitism. And they'll hate us because, right, because look what we did to Haman and we did to other people, you know, while we were fighting for it, right, you know. We got a very bad press and they'll hate us, you know. So, Shochel Ahem, so she said, so let her back again to them. She says, Kvork Suvani, Aldibre Hayom and Malchim Mudaya Forest. Look, I'm not telling you to conceal it because it's already been published in the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia. Okay? So, in other words, don't suppress it, but celebrate for it. This is what she wrote to them. Okay? Rav, the Rav Chanina, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rav Chaviva. Alright, so here they quote four authorities who are pals, right? Rav, Rav Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav Chaviva. Okay? So, Masna, the Chulei Seder Moed, called so they taught that throughout the Seder Moed. Seder Moed, of course, means, you know, Shabbos, Erevin, Megillah, Psochim, and so on and so forth, you know, whatever has to deal with the holidays. Throughout there, Kol Kehai Zuga, whenever you have these different people mentioned together, Chidlufei Rabbi Yochanan Ma'el Rabbi Yonasan. Then instead of saying Rabbi Yochanan, you should instead include the name of Rabbi Yonasan. Okay, no, so God's fine. But it doesn't affect us very much. It's simply that we're trying to get straight who is the real person who should be included among you. Right, okay. So anyway, getting back. Shochalahem Esther. So Esther sent again another letter to them. All right. I said to you before, Kivuni, make me permanent. And you refused because you're afraid of anti-Semitism. It's anti-Semitism, right? So she said, okay, Kisvuni Ladoros. So write in the Megillah, you know, throughout the generations, you know, what I did. Shokulo. So they sent an answer to her. And what did they say? I said, Haloi Kasavti Loch Shalishim. They quoted a pasuk that we find in the book of Proverbs, and in it, Shlomo HaMelech is talking about the various proverbs that he wrote, and he says, didn't I write Shalishim? So what is Shalishim? In this particular case, we say, a threefold teaching, or something like that. Now, this is how it's going to be interpreted, okay? Namely, Shalishim v'lo ribeim. In other words, we have to have three passages, or three fold mentions of Purim and not four. Meaning what? We cannot add the Megillah to the Bible. This is what they are implying to her, because we already have three previous mentions of Amalek, his attack, and Exodus, correct? At the end of Parsha B'Shalach, you have the story of Ayovi Amalek, right? And then, of course, in Parsha Kisese, we have Parsha Zachor, right? It's mentioned. And then, of course, if you remember, when we talk about Nevi'im, now remember that Nevi'im means not only prophets. To us, Nevi'im includes the books of Yahushua, Shoftim, Melachim Aleph, Melachim Beis, Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis, and so on. You know, in other words, books that I prefer to think of as being historical books, but they are included among the Nevi'im, as far as the tripartite division of the Bible is concerned. Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, okay? So they're saying to her, look, we already have three mentions. And if we adopt the statement of King Solomon, then in that particular case, we cannot add another book, period. So they refuse, right? Needless to say, Esther is a persistent young lady. She's not happy with that. And so, we'll see right now what happens at this particular point. Okay? So, Achimotsu Loi Mikra Kotsubater. until they look, not, maybe there's some justification for what Esther is saying, yeah, but we have to find authorization for it. And lo and behold, in the Torah, they found authorization. What does it say in the Torah? Well, at the end of the story about, you know, the attack of Amalek on the people of Israel, it says, Kesov zos zikaron b'sefer. Write this as a memorial in the book. Okay? Translating it literally. Okay? Kesov zos, write down this. What is this? Masha kosov kan of a Mishnah Torah. Okay? What is written over here, namely Parshas Amalek, and also what is written in Mishnah Torah, which of course is another way to say Sefer Devarim, right? Namely, Zachor, so that those refer to Zos. This is the Torah. Don't forget the Zos HaTorah, Shes HaMoshe, right? Zos HaTorah, so Zos is Torah, okay. Zikaron, what is Zikaron? Says Masha Kosub Anavim. That would be, you know, what is written in the prophets, as I told you, the story of Shaul told, you know, to punish the Amalekites, right? So what about Basefer? So Basefer, all right, that means what we can now write about in Kesuvim, right? Masha Kosuv, Bamegillah, okay? And they say, Ketanoi, this difference of opinion is already goes back to an earlier Machloikas among the Tanoim, where they said, Kesov zos, what does it mean? It says, Masha kosov kan, right? In other words, Kesov zos, according to opinion number one, is write this down, namely the story of the attack of the Amalekites. Zikaron, Masha kosov Mishnah Torah. That is Zohar, you know, Zikaron, right? This is written in the Book of the Devarim. Bat Sefer is Masha Kosev Banavim, right? In other words, the story of the, you know, Saul punishing the Amalekites, right? And this, therefore, according to this opinion, do we find that there's justification for having the Megillah Esther? No, right? Well, this is the opinion of Divrei Rabbi Yoshua, right? Opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. However, Rabbi Elazar Mordoi, he comes along, he says, Oimer, Kisov Zos, right? Masha Kosov Kav Mishnah Torah, Zos, as we said before, you know the way we interpreted just a few moments ago, that Zos means what is written here, namely Parshas Amalek and also Mishnah Torah. Zikaron, Masha Kosov Badavim, the story of Saul the Amalekites, and Masefer Masha Kosov Megillah. So that therefore they have justification now to do what? To include the Megillah Esther as part of the Bible. Okay? I'll tell you, it's 8:45. I'm a little on the Hazelic side. So I think we'll stop over here because we're going also into a somewhat complicated Indian next week, but we shall continue. Tonight is the 16th, if I remember correctly, the month of August.
15.
Today is only the 15th, not the 16th. 15th
of August.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just got an extra day.
All right. It's Erev the 16th. Okay. And it's still the year 2001, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. And, well, you know, I'll tell you, the year... Tavshin Samach Aleph only has about another month to run before Rosh Hashanah, so, right, yeah, right. So, at any rate, okay, we are, again, continuing on Maseches Megillah, Dav Zayin Omid Aleph, and we are roughly about two lines above the long line, okay? All right. Now, Sylvia, in order to answer your question, first of all, okay, we see that there is a difference of opinion as to the authenticity, or shall we say, you know, whether the Book of Esther should have been included in the writings, okay, in the Tanakh, into the Bible, okay? All right. So they tried to find justification.
In the Torah itself.
Right. The Torah, we know that the story of Purim, you know, has some justification in that we speak of the Torah about the attack of the Amalekites upon the people of Israel. This is in, you know, in the book of Exodus at the end of Parsha B'Shalach. Mm-hmm. And then, in a later reference, we have to it at the end of Parsha Kisetse, when we read the Parsha Zachor, okay? Remember what Amalek did unto you, and so on.
These are
okay.
And the Persians at that time, that they were the Amalekites.
Well, no, it's not that the Persians were the Amalekites, but we will identify Haman because it says Haman HaGogi, okay? And what do we mean by Agogi? So Agogi means that he's a descendant of Agag. Who is Agag? Agag was the king of Amalek in the days of Saul, when Saul was commanded now in the Nevi'im, right, the next section of the Torah, to go and to punish the Amalekites, okay? All right. She didn't do the way he should have done, correct? Okay. So, the question is, then how do we account for the fact whether Esther occupies a legitimate place in Kisuvim or not? And with this, as we see, there are differences of opinion. It was based upon something that we had last week, if you remember, where Esther appeals to the people of Israel. What she says? She says, Kivuni Ladoros, please make sure that I have a permanent place throughout the generations, okay? And there were questions that some Chachamim were not happy with Esther because they said, if we have the story of Esther, it's going to arouse anti-Semitism against us. The Goyim will not like us because they'll read about how the Jews they defended themselves and took vengeance against the Goyim. You know, what's happening today in Israel? We Jews are the wrong people because we're trying to defend our own lives.
The Goyim find reasons.
Right.
They look for reasons.
Right. So this happened 2,000 years ago. More story takes place almost about 2,500 years ago, and we find the same problem in those days that they have over here. Those who feel that it's going to arouse anti-Semitism if we read the story of Purim, and those who say no, what's the point? As Esther is quoted as saying a few lines above before what you heard, where she says, look, it's already written down. So the question is it authentic? Does it belong authentically in the Bible or not? Now, at this particular point, we're going to continue that particular argument, only to take it from a different point of view at this point. Okay? All right. Now, before we read the text, I have to tell you, we're going to come across a question which is called Metabes HaYadayim. What does it mean, Metabes HaYadayim? Literally means that it makes the hands unclean. So what is this a reference to? All right. Now, as you know, back in the old days when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, okay, so a person could not enter the Beis HaMikdash and, partake of any of the sacrificial food over there unless he was in a state of Tara. He had to be in a state of purity, okay? And there were different things that could cause a person to lose his status of being clean or pure, whatever you want to say, okay? We usually call it clean, but, it doesn't mean that you have dirty hands. What it means is that, you've come in contact with something which causes tumor. As, for example, being in the same room with a dead body. Or, for example, touching a sheretz. A sheretz is a dead reptile or something like that, okay?
Live one's okay.
Live one is, that there's already been made, but it's a difference of opinion, but particularly about a dead reptile, there's no question. That's the topic. Okay. Yeah, it could be a lizard,
it could be a
frog, at least, was, I don't know. Whatever.
Only a reptile? It doesn't deal with other animals?
Among others.
That's among other things. Then you have a more complicated business. Namely, that if a person becomes tamei, what is going to happen to the food and the drink that he eats? What is going to happen? Or, for example, if a kli, in other words, let's say any vessel, whether it's whatever it may be, it could be a dish, it could be a cup, and so on, and it comes in contact, somebody who is unclean touched it. Of course, another source of impurity would be, for example, a person who is suffering from leprosy, okay? Another possible cause of impurity would be a man who had a seminal emission or something like that. So you have all different things that would happen, and obviously, before you could come into the Beis HaMikdash, so you had to immerse yourself in a mikveh, and then after that, then you'd be allowed to enter and to partake, okay? Now, therefore, our sages at one point in history, approximately 2,000 years ago, okay, give or take a few years, decided that they wanted to make sure that people would behave reverently to the sacred writings, okay? And don't forget, of course, in those days they didn't have books such as we have, published books or anything like that, but, you know, people would write the writings, you know, in scrolls, Megillus, okay? So the question is, at this particular point, whether the book of Esther is to be included among the sacred scriptures, okay? If it is, then in that case, it is possible to be metame sayadayim, in the sense that if a person, for example, has, you know, came in contact with one of the sources of impurity and then he takes it, so we would say that his hands would be unclean and therefore he would regard, you know, the book as with less reverence, with less sacredness than if it was not metame sayadayim. Okay, this is a question. I mean, as I say, it's a technical business that, you know, to us, we're so many centuries removed from it, so we don't understand this whole concept of Torah Vatum, okay? But if we bear in mind the fact that Metame Sayadayim is a technical term over here, which means that it is sacred and therefore we have to be careful not to touch it with hands that are already unclean from something else, okay, then this is it. Okay, so here is the question. All right. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. As I say, we are now two lines above the long line. Okay? On the page, the middle page. Yeah. Okay. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. You see that? Yeah. Second line above the long line. All right. And what does he say? He says, Esther Einu Metame Sayadayim. He says that the book of Esther does not Metame Sayadayim. Which means, in other words, that in accordance with Rav Yehuda, who quotes Shmuel, remember he said it, the name of Shmuel, it says, according to him, then there is no intrinsic sacredness in the book of Esther. This is the statement that is made. So now the Gemara asks the question, Lameimra, does that mean to say, the Sovar Shmuel, that Shmuel was of the opinion, Esther la Birah HaKadosh Nemra, that the book of Esther was not written with the Holy Spirit. Okay? So, is that what Shmuel's saying? Now, they quote a different opinion in the name of Shmuel. But Omar Shmuel, didn't Shmuel say, Esther Baruch HaKadosh Nimrod? Right? That the book of Esther was written, was said, you know, it was written is really what it implies, but, you know, it was done in the Holy Spirit. So how do we get out of the difficulty that first Shmuel is quoted as what? Saying that it's not Metame Sayadayim, which would mean that it's not sacred, right? And then the second statement, which says that it is sacred, it is Metame Sayadayim, right? It was said by Ruach HaKodesh, excuse me. So they say, okay, this is how we work that one out. Nemro Likrois, well, Nemro Likhtayim. Which would mean that in Shmuel's opinion, it's okay to read the book of Esther, but it's not okay to write it down. In other words, it could be said, in other words, you could study it orally, but you could not do what? You could not commit it to writing. All right, that's according to Shmuel. Okay. So Meisbeit, upon this, they ask the following kasha. You always find people disagree, right? So, Rabbi Meir Oimer, and this is taken, of course, from the classic case, you know, we have a whole discussion about this in the Gemara and Bava Basra, but in other places as well. Okay. Rabbi Meir Oimer, he says, Koheles Einu Metamis Hayadayim, which would mean that the book of Koheles, what in English we call Ecclesiastes, but it's such a long word that it's only good for the goyim. For the Jews, it's Koheles. Okay.
Yeah, it is easy to spell.
Absolutely. It says Koheles does not Metame Sayadayim. In other words, it is not sacred, according to him, right? According to Rabbi Meir. Umachloikis, but where was there a disagreement among the rabbis as to whether it should be included in the sacred scripture. Now he says that was Bishir Hashem. It was in Shir Hashem. Okay? This is what he says. Alright? In other words, some rabbis feel that Shir Hashem should be included, that it was Kisvei Kodesh, in other words, it was sacred literature, and others were not. This is the opinion quoted in the name of Rabbi Meir. Don't have to tell you, I mean, that today we include all of them. But as you can see, there was a great deal of machlokes at the beginning as to whether it should be this book or that book should be included in what would be called the canon. In other words, the accepted Kisvei HaKodesh. Okay? So, that was Rabbi Meir's opinion. Alright? Rabbi Yossi, he has a different opinion. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Shir Hashem, and Tavi Seidai. In other words, there's no question, according to Rabbi Yossi, that Shir Hashem is sacred. But Umachloikas B'Kohelis. But with Kohelis, there is a difference of opinion. Some say Kohelis should be included among Kisvei HaKodesh, and some say that it doesn't belong in the Kisvei HaKodesh. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he comes along and he says, Kohelis B'Kulei B'Shamayim U'Chumei B'Eschila. In general, we have the following rule of halacha, that Beis Hillel, they are the mekilim, in other words, they take the easier view of halacha, whereas Beis Shammai take the more severe, the more view of halacha. So, but there are some cases where we find that punkt fakir, that Beis Hillel appears to be even more stringent, even more strict than Beis Shammai. Now, according to Rab Shimon over here, Kohelis is among the Kulei Beis Shammai. In other words, what? Beis Shammai would say that it ainu mitami is hayadayim. In other words, it's not holy. Whereas Chumi Beis Hillel says it is holy, and therefore would be mitami is hayadayim. Okay? Avol. But how about Ruas, Mishir, Hashirim, the Esther? With all of them, we say mitami is hayadayim. Okay? They all are what? All of them are holy. So in other words, what do we see over here? In this opinion, the book of Esther is considered a sacred scripture. Okay? So, okay. So last one who was quoted is who? Rabbi Shimon. Right. So he says, who? The Yomak Rabbi Yoshua. He was of the same opinion as was Rabbi Yoshua. And what about Rabbi Yeshua? Well, obviously, Rabbi Yeshua was in favor of including what? The book of Esther as sacred scripture. Tanya. And now we have another Baraisa which speaks about a similar point, discussion. Rabbi Shimon ben Benasya, Mary says, Kohelis ainu mitami is hayadayim, right? He says that Kohelis should not be included in sacred literature. Why? He says, because a good deal of the book, what does it consist of? It's wise sayings on the part of Shlomo. Okay? So Abu Lo, so the sages said to him, V'chizu bilvad omar. Tell me, the book that we have, the book of Mishlei, okay, the book of Proverbs, is that all that Shlomo HaMelech had to say? V'alo k'vor ne'emar. Don't we find a reference which says, and this happens to be a quotation taken from the book of Kings, where it says, Vayadaber Shloshes Alofim Moshel, that King Solomon was the one who spoke 3,000 proverbs. Now, if you take count all the the psukim, so to speak, in the book of Mishlei, one thing you can be sure that it doesn't come to what? Doesn't come to 3,000, okay? Whereas here it says that he spoke. So, the Omer, and in addition, there's something else. We find towards the end of the book of Mishlei, book of Proverbs, it's written al Tosef al Devorov. In other words, do not add to what he's had to say. So, obviously, if that's the case, my the Omer. So what did they say? Why did they quote this? And it's also written, do not add. V'chi teimor, and if you say, meimor tuvo, all right, so Shlomo HaMelech said a lot of things. Omar, right? De'i boi ichtev, right? Vadai boi lo ichtev. De'i boi ichtev vadai. De'i boi lo ichtev. Okay. whichever way you put the evil. But anyway, what it says, he boy, if he felt like it, so what did he do? So he wrote it in the book of Mishlei. And if he didn't feel like writing it down, so he didn't, right?
How do they know he did 3,000?
That's in the book of Kings, it says so.
Okay.
The book of Kings, it says so. So, if we are to say then that he wrote some, but he left out others, okay? Didn't feel like writing them down. So, Toshma. So, if that's the case, why then, as they say, Al Tosef Al Devarav, do not add to his words? In other words, what is the implication over here? The implication here is something that reminds us of what we read in the Torah just a couple of weeks ago. Parsha Veschanan. What does it say over there? It says that everything that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said, you are not to add to it and not to subtract from it. Okay? So this is it. In other words, then, according to this opinion, the book of Mishlei belongs in sacred scriptures. Why? Because we are told not to add anything, you know, to what has already been written in this book. Okay. So now that brings us right back again to what? To the book of Esther, right? Tanya. So in that connection, we have learned another baraisa. What does this baraisa say? It says, Rabbi Eliezer Eimer, Esther Baruch HaKadosh Nemra. He says, I can prove to you that the book of Esther was written with the Holy Spirit. How so? Shinema, take a look. There's a pasuk over there which says, Vayomer Haman Belibo. And Haman said to himself. Now the question is, how could the Jews know what Haman is saying to himself? So it had to be the Ruach HaKadosh that informed, you know, let's say Esther when she wrote, she and Mordechai, when they got together and they wrote the Megillah, you know, that this is what Haman was thinking, okay? So that's his proof, that it's Ruach HaKodesh, okay? Rabbi Akiva Omer, he has a different quotation. He says, Esther Baruch HaKodesh. In other words, now the next group of authorities, they're all in agreement that it was written with the Ruach HaKodesh, right? But that they base it on a different pasuk, each of them, how we can prove it. So, what would Rabbi Akiva choose as his pasuk? He says, Shenemar. There's a pasuk which says, Vatahi Esther Noises Chaim V'Eina Kol Rayeho, that Esther found favor in the eyes of everyone who saw her. God's fine, everybody liked her. Now, how could he know that everybody liked Esther? Right? Okay. So, Rabbi Meir, he takes a different one. He says, Esther Baruch HaKadosh Nemra, Shenemar. Says, my pasuk is Vayevoda Hadover le Mordechai, and this matter became known to Mordechai. Okay. Of course, what are we talking about over there? We're talking about that he was listening, right, to Bigson and Seresh, two of the royal chamberlains who plotted to kill King Ahasuerus, right? So this thing became known to Mordechai. Okay. Well, obviously, how could it be known to Mordechai? So he must have Ruach HaKodesh. That's what it did. Okay. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Meir. Right. Okay. Now along comes Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus. He has a different verse that he's going to quote. Omer Esther Baruch HaKodesh Demra says, yeah, Shenemar, because we find the pasuk later on that, you know, when the Jews took vengeance against all the people, you know, who rose up in order to kill Jews. So it's written over there, Uvad Biza lo shochez yodam, which means that they did not literally stretch forth their hands unto the spoil. In other words, they did not take anything, any of the property that belonged to the people whom they killed in self-defense, okay, against the anti-Semitic. Okay. Omar Shmuel, so Shmuel says, I have I hotsum, you know, if I were there, meaning if I were there present when these great rabbis all were discussing, you know, how could you prove that Esther was written the Ruach HaKodesh, right? So he says, if I were there at that time, Hava Amina, do you know what I would have said? I would have said, Miutzoda Adifa Mikulcha. I would have said something, an argument, literally. It says a thing, but a word, you know, but that means I can argue. I would have given them an argument that's even stronger than all the other quotations that they cited. Shinemar. As it says, at the beginning it says, Kiyamu v'kiblu. that they accepted. That is, first of all, they affirmed and they accepted. Now, what does it mean, they affirmed and they accepted? So he says, Kiyumu Lamala. In other words, up in heaven, they affirmed or confirmed, whatever you want to say, Masha Kiblu Lamata, what the Jews had already accepted upon themselves on earth. In other words, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and his heavenly court were willing, you know, to accept the decision of what had taken place in the courts, you know, in the Beis Din down below, where they, you know, they not only decided to accept the book of Esther as being holy, but also to carry out what the various rulings concerning how to celebrate Purim. Okay. All right. So Shmuel says, I have the best argument. Yes, Arthur.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is this discussion an after effect or a basic discussion? I ever thought that the canon of the 24 books was established by the Anshe Knesset of Gedolim.
A lot of it was decided later in Yom. A lot of it was decided in Yom. Okay. Because there's still a question, though, about the authenticity of certain books, and you have to realize that during this time there are also other books that were not considered authentic, right? This is what we call the...